At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com today for limited time offers.
This man is among the best guests you can get on the Middle East. So much experience, and we're so fortunate to have him. When we get him, Aaron David Miller is with us. He has worked with numerous administrations, both Republican and the Democrats. Right now, he's with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. You see him all across the networks. He is as well-versed in the Middle East as anyone. And Aaron, like all of our guests, is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Aaron, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. When we look back as of now, and there's obviously more information to find out, and the upcoming years of how the U.S., Israel, and Iran all respond, but as you look at what happened, do you believe Donald Trump made the right decision in going after the three nuclear sites in Iran?
I mean, it really depends. I think on a definition of what American interests are, and I would identify three of them. Number one, stopping counterterrorism against the homeland or our interests in the region. Number two, maintaining access to Middle East oil and hydrocarbons, not because we need them, but oil trades in a single market. That's quite clear. And number three, preventing the emergence of a regional power with a nuclear weapon. In my judgment, those three interests all relate to America, and they're vital because they relate to American security and prosperity. I think the judgment call, of course, with respect to the strike is, and it clearly served the third interest, preventing a regional power, mm-hmm. adversarial regional power, from getting a nuke. It's not clear to me that Iran was on the cusp of weaponizing. Although I have no illusions here, it is and clearly even remains after the attacks, a nuclear weapons threshold state. That is to say, it has all the elements required to build a crude nuclear device, not on a missile necessarily, but one that could be delivered or dropped for a plane, as we did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or put in a piece of cargo and shipped abroad. I think it has bought time. It may have caused Iran to reconsider the cost of being that close to a nuclear weapon. But the final word on this, Chad, is not, in my judgment, is not in, unless you can translate that military power into a stable end state.
Yeah.
And right now, I think that's going to be very hard to do.
How is that possible? How could Trump, Rubio, Wyckoff, others internationally who want to see stability in the Middle East, how could they create where we feel like, more importantly, you and other experts feel like, a year or two from now, that there's some level of acceptance Iran towards Israel, and there's something that's a much better, you know, government-to-government relations between the United States and Iran, especially considering the approach the president has taken through his first administration and now this abrupt turn here in the second administration?
Right. I mean, I wish there was a Hollywood ending to this story.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I had 27 years in this region and working officially, and then another 20 studying it. I just think that it offers up. People are looking for Hollywood endings. They're looking for conclusive results. They're looking for black or white. The region offers up gray. In this case, frankly, the current regime is founded on three basic principles. The supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, 86 years old, the longest governing authoritarian in the world today. Three ideological propositions. Number one, death to Israel. Number two, death to the U.S. And number three, the promotion of the hijab, the covering that women, so many women in Iran are forced or voluntarily accept as a form of dress, but an article of clothing that represents to many women in Iran freedom and a much more modern life. I think as long as that regime remains in power, the odds of anything that you described, normal peaceful relations between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran, I think that the chances of that are slim to none. And not to make a joke out of this, but slim has already left town.
Yes.
Because largely you have an ideological regime and no alternative. And that regime controls all of the authoritarian repressive instruments of state power. And I think it's what we're talking about is not a transformation between the U.S. and Iran, but something along the lines of a transaction. But remember, it was Donald Trump who in 2018 pulled out of an agreement that probably had it been adhered to and sustained, there would have been no strike, because the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, would have been there, as they've been there from 2015 to 2018, with eyes and ears on the ground. Doesn't mean the Iranians weren't cheating. But the fact is, since this president in this term pulled out of the Iran nuclear agreement, Iran's advances of their nuclear program, the amount of fissile material that's required to make a bomb, which some believe was taken out of Fordo and stored in a secret site, the centrifuges, the advanced centrifuges, which continue to spin. Many of those were destroyed at Fordo and Natanz, but there are other centrifuges the Iranians had not yet deployed. So I think it strains credulity to the breaking point, Jed, to assume that somehow these strikes by the Israelis and the U.S. somehow going to make Iran more flexible. It may make them smarter in the way they pursue their policies, because the supreme leader does not want a major war, which would be not just, you know, a half dozen B-2 Spirit bombers dropping 12, you know, massive ordnance penetrators, but a real war. It doesn't want that. And he also doesn't want a sustained campaign with the Israelis. So I think they'll hunker down. They'll play the long game. They haven't yet agreed to let the IAEA back for inspections. It's going to be increasingly fraught, I'm afraid.
Aaron David Miller with us. You heard him allude to it. Well over 20 years working with a Republican administration, a Democratic administration, providing analysis on the Middle East for close to 50 years. Aaron is with us. Bibi Netanyahu is coming to the United States next week. What do you expect out of those talks? And then also, where do you stand on what some people have offered up, and mainly these folks are critics of Donald Trump, that Bibi Netanyahu outfoxed Donald Trump, created the scenario, laid out a situation, and brought in Trump. And if he doesn't lay it out that way, Trump would not have responded with the attacks the way he did.
Right. I get this question all the time. And my answer is, you know, I don't subscribe to the story, which I think, frankly, is a fairy tale, that a very clever Israeli prime minister somehow maneuvered Donald Trump into a situation where he now regrets being. I think the president, there's a two-part answer to that. The president trapped himself, I think, by setting a completely unrealistic two-month deadline to break the impasse between the U.S. and Iran and to conclude an agreement. There was absolutely no way. And that deadline expired, I might add, Chad, a day before the Israelis, June 13th, overnight, struck Iran. That's part one. He boxed himself in. But part two is, I think, the answer to your question. Having seen what the Israelis did that Thursday, Friday, marveled at the operational brilliance, the way they penetrated Iranian intelligence, the decapitation strategy they pursued against at least 10 prominent Iranian physicists and engineers, eliminating significant figures in the Iranian general staff, Donald Trump looked at this, and having set this artificial deadline, then became part of, willingly, became part of the Israeli ruse, because the Iranians were lulled into believing, as Trump had said, that there would be no decision on military action until after the sixth round of negotiations concluded in Oman. They were to conclude that Sunday. So he played along with the Israelis, and then he set his own phony two-week deadline, that within 2 weeks, he said he'd give diplomacy a chance. I think he saw the Israelis operate brilliantly. I think he realized or believed the Iranians were, to use his words, tapping him along or playing him. And I think in the end, he saw personal and political advantage if the American response could be brought off in a way that was a one and done.
Yep.
And he now, I think, he has quieted those concerns in MAGA world that somehow he's on the eve of doing another Bush 43 in Iraq. And I think he what you're going to see on Monday is, unlike the April visit, where there was some tension between Netanyahu and Trump over Trump's announcement that he was beginning negotiations with Iran, I think you'll see a lot of champagne glasses clinking,
yeah,
except on one issue, which is Gaza.
Oh, yeah. Let's get there. What is the likelihood, and I'll let you go after this because I know your time's short. What is the likelihood that over the next few months we could see something significant regarding, first, the release of the hostages, and, of course, that has to be tied to some level of a ceasefire?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 2 months, as you know, is an eternity.
Yeah,
in Middle Eastern politics. I would go out on a limb here, which I don't like doing, and I would say that in the wake of the Israeli and U.S. strikes, two things have occurred. There are two new data points. Number one, Benjamin Netanyahu's political stock at home has risen exponentially. That's number one. And number two, Donald Trump's leverage, because of what he did for the Israelis and to advance American national interests on the nuclear issue, he's got more leverage now than ever before. I think the combination of those two things will produce, within the next several weeks, another interim exchange in which Hamas would release 10 out of the 20 remaining living hostages and half of the bodies, tragically, of those who have died, in return for a 60-day ceasefire, surging humanitarian assistance into Gaza, and the release of a large number of Palestinian prisoners. I don't think Netanyahu can bring himself, because of his coalition partners, which have threatened to bolt if he ends the war, don't think he can bring himself to formally agree to the two things Hamas wants, end of the war and a withdrawal of all Israeli forces from Gaza. But I do think it's more than possible that in the next 2 weeks, there'll be another interim exchange.
Interesting. Always great stuff, sir. Thank you so much. Be safe, and we'll reach out again down the line.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye.
Six different administrations, Democrats, Republicans, 20-plus other years as an analyst, still razor sharp. Middle East is still huge. Talk of Israel and Syria. We could have taken that conversation a lot of different ways, and we wanted to go back in this day because we fall victim to this all the time, that a major story happens, and then 17 other major stories happen,
mm-hmm,
and we just kind of forget about it.
Yeah. Still going on.
This country attacked three nuclear sites against the country, by the way, which has been saying death to America. It was by a president who said, I'm going to keep you out of wars. There's been a huge debate on what sort of damage was done. So it was the right time to reach out to Aaron and have him on, and we appreciate him coming on.